Welcome back, everyone. This is Eric Elveson with the Digital Education Podcast. Today, I'm with Henry Kastner, who is managing partner of Sovereigns Capital and is also co-founder and previous CEO of Bandwidth. Mr. Kastner has been involved in a number of different ventures, but mostly I'm excited to interview him today and to have a conversation with him today because he runs a podcast called Faith-Driven Entrepreneurs. So this is the first time I've had the opportunity to do a podcast with a podcaster. So it's exciting for me, but I get a little nervous. But Henry, I got a question for you, especially because you spend so much time with entrepreneurs, talking to entrepreneurs. You've really have lived an entrepreneurial life in a lot of ways too. Is why did you become interested in hearing their stories and then sharing their stories on your podcast?
I like stories. I know that I should figure out a better answer to that than I love hearing the way that people have been able to bring together all their gifting and their experience and what has formed somebody and their worldview and what they view their mission as. And everybody's got a different story. And there's something really special about being invited into somebody's life story by hearing what makes them tick. And I don't know if it's a vicarious thing, but I think we all love it. And I think that God designed us to want to understand people's story and have to be a part of other people's story and have them be a part of ours.
So one of the things that I had a friend maybe about a year ago on this podcast who said that innovation comes out of pain. And I've listened to many of your podcasts where you interview people where there was maybe a painful circumstance, a painful situation in life, whether it was their life or their job or just some realization, or there was some sort of dissatisfaction with what their situation was or where the status quo was. Like, what drives or what have you discovered with these people really drives them to these places of, you know what, I haven't tried this yet, or someone hasn't discovered this yet, or I'm going to go and walk into this unknown place and create or develop a solution to a problem or build a business? Like, what do you see when you meet these people and hear their stories?
I think that we are programmed. I think that, you know, so we're creating the image of this God who created, and his work, depending on your worldview, his work lasted for 6 out of 7 days, and he built a beautiful world with incredible beauty and innovation and creativity, and we're creating in his image. And I think that when we find that something is amiss and outside of that world order, I think there's something that's programmed in us from inception that wants to fix it. I think that entrepreneurs are about solving problems, about really meeting the injustice in the world that they might see that might also break God's heart. And when an entrepreneur can experience that firsthand and really get a sense of brokenness and like, this is not right. This is not the way this thing should be. I feel it acutely because it just impacted me and I'm going to get out there. I'm going to solve it. And I think there's something really special about that type of creation mandate, that entrepreneurial drive, that out of a place of brokenness and despondency sometimes, but just really understanding that there's just something wrong for an entrepreneur to create. And I think we all have it. I think whether we're in education, whether we're in business, we all want to solve a challenge. If we're ministering to a student, we see that there's something wrong. We want to fix it. And I think that there's something that's innate that's created in us to do that. And I don't know that I know of a single entrepreneur that didn't have their entrepreneurial experience be born out of either a problem to solve or an opportunity to seek, because the world should be different.
No, I really appreciate that. And it's interesting to me because, I mean, in so many ways, it's what's driven me into so many different areas of life as well. And you know, and even as I listen to your podcast and hear these stories of what drives these entrepreneurs, their faith, their story, their experience, or that opportunity, you know, one of the questions that I have, and you brought it up in a podcast where it was like you were talking about San Jose and Silicon Valley and it being kind of the hub and the center kind of life right now and of activity. What would be, you know, as people enter into these spaces of trying to create or fix or build, like, what would be your encouragement? Because I've had a lot of friends come to San Jose and they don't last, or they come and it's a struggle and it's hard and they're looking for advice. And when I think of Silicon Valley and when I think of this world right now, is how do you go into that space knowing you're all in, but then there's also this space of how do you kind of allow that faith to guide you and protect you in that space?
Wow. So there's a lot there. And I actually have thought a lot about this. I haven't articulated a lot. So as I try to put my thoughts into words, this is just a very unique place, an incredible pace. There's such incredible drive. People here are about success and innovation and creativity and working hard. And a lot of times that success can become an idol and it becomes the focus. There's so many families out here where both parents work just to be able to, you know, just keep the lights on. And it's hard. It's a different culture than so many other places. There's part of it that is invigorating. And there's parts of that that is just exasperating. And it's just parts of it that are just incredibly exhausting. And for me, it's a function of being on mission. If I wasn't on mission, I wouldn't be here. I think that with time, the pace and just the values that come alongside that can be potentially challenging. I think that a lot of folks out here, I want to make sure that I don't throw my neighbors under the bus, but there's, you know, the last frontier really to immortality is death, right? And there are people out here that are inventing different technologies to end longevity. And so there's almost like a god complex out here that can be invigorating because, you know, all things are possible. And yet I don't really think that that's really the world and the world order. So if you don't have a missiology, a theology of how to interact in a space like that, which is to make sure that people aren't just worshiping the creation, but also worshiping the creator, then you won't stay here for very long. So in our case, we feel like we're on mission. We're on mission here to bear witness to a God who loves us, who created all the things around us that we use, whether it's the linear accelerator that's a couple miles up the road or some of these new, you know, blockchain technologies. But in each case, to help people that otherwise, after innovating, have come to really understand, why am I doing this? Well, to be able to be there for an answer and to be able to explore that with them. Very, you know, very smart folks out here really wanting to understand a faith that can satisfy their intellect as well as the spiritual need that they have. And we try to wade into that. And I wouldn't say that we do it perfectly with the Faith-Driven Entrepreneur or Faith-Driven Investor podcast, but we love having those discussions. And but it's an exciting place that we found ourselves living in.
It is amazing. And when I listen to your podcast, I'm interested in you have conversations with people who are entrepreneurs who've built something over a long period of time. They've built a business, they built their company, they've built a ministry or a program, you know, and they've done it over a long period of time. And then you've also interviewed, and it's kind of what I would entitle serial entrepreneurs, where they go and they start and they start and they start and they get things going and they get things moving. What's the difference between the two people, or are they kind of the same person and the other person just looks for new ways to innovate or to be entrepreneurial within their own ministry, program, or company?
Wow, that's a great question. Well, I think that it's all of the above. I do think that there are some people that based on their wiring, and I'd say that I'm one of them, that love creating and love going through that creative process and then love lending a certain amount of energy as the rocket takes off and maybe until that first booster rocket kind of like falls away. I'm one of those people after 3 or 4 years, and I see lots of them. We invest in lots of them. And yet, to your point also, there's a whole group of entrepreneurs that start a business. I'll give you an example. My business partner at Bandwidth, David Morgan. David and I co-founded Bandwidth together just about 20 years ago. I have left and stayed on board and still partner to some degree in Bandwidth, but the reality is I'm just a cheerleader there. He has had this faithful obedience in the same direction, looking to innovate and satisfy his entrepreneurial urge within the context of one company. And that's a little bit of a different wiring than somebody who every 3 to 4 years needs to do something new. But you know, the other thing is there are a whole bunch of different people that also have that type of creativity that never start a business and aren't business owners. Again, everybody has a need to create and to innovate. And we get a chance to do that, whether we're in the classroom, whether we are in business, whether we are in ministry. But you're right. You're very astute in being able to find that there are actually two different types of entrepreneurs that seem to make it in the business world. Ones that need to go ahead and create every 3 to 4 years and others that don't. Maybe because grass is greener. I have a tremendous amount of admiration for the people who can have, as I mentioned before, this is something that comes from Eugene Peterson. It's a faithful obedience in the same direction. They can stay the course. They can look to love on their employees, go through the times that are boring, go through the times that maybe there is a plateau in their business, but just stay the course, just faithfully executing. And that's super, super special. For the entrepreneurs that need to move on every 3 or 4 years, and again, I'd put myself in that latter category, it's just so important that we have enough of an understanding about us and our team to make sure that we transition well. If we create something over the course of that 3 or 4 or 5, or in my case, 10 years, and you don't have that, then all the things that we'd work for, including the culture and just a meaningful opportunity for our employees to work, that could go away if we don't identify that weakness. And I'll call it myself my weakness, and then I can get distracted. If we can't backfill that, then we're in trouble.
No, that's really helpful, especially for someone like me too. I think I would find myself a little bit more in that place where I've moved, and now I've transitioned into a place where I'm staying, you know? And so it is these questions I even have to ask myself of, what does it mean, somebody who likes to create, you know, had the opportunity to start a school, had the opportunity to rebuild a school, had the opportunity to do these things, and now I'm in a place where I'm staying, and how do I build and find the creativity within that space? It's an interesting conversation. And I think one of the things that I find, especially in education, is there's so much turnover because people do like the creation part, but they don't like necessarily that maintenance or the building or the next phase in some of those.
Yeah, I think there's another dynamic that's at play here as well. And that is particularly for somebody like you who has done a number of different things and then is at a place that they feel that they need to stay in. It's a sense of calling. Many entrepreneurs that have stayed at the helm of a company for 20 years at different times really felt like they wanted to leave, would have loved to have left, would have loved to have seen the opportunity. And yet when I think about it with David or some of the other people I know that have done that, it's a sense of calling. It's a sense of meaning and purpose that transcends what our individual needs are or our wanderlusts. And being able to discern in a faith community or in time, you've probably gathered by now that I'm active in my Christian faith, time in the Bible or time in prayer, it's just super important that we're able to discern what's a holy discontent and a holy ambition to do the next thing, or what is something that is just our own humanity that wants us to go and chase the next bright object. And that's really important. And there's no easy answers to that other than to go through a process to discern one's calling. And it's really, I've got a lot of respect for you to have gone through that. So if you've gone through this kind of serial nature of creating every 3 or 4 or 5 years, and then to be in a spot now where you feel called, that's a real special place because you've been able to say, I've got to be, the mission and the calling are more important than the excitement of a new thing.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting to be able to be in that place. One of the things that I was wondering, when I listen to your podcast and I listen to you interview, there is a sense of generosity that I get when you interview these people, a generosity of spirit and a generosity of care and concern for the world, the people. It goes back to even what you said earlier. I was wondering if if you see that in these people, maybe it's because they're allowing you to interview them and give of their time. But do you see like generosity of spirit as something that comes out of these people naturally, or is it something that maybe has developed over time as they've walked this journey?
Wow, that's a great question. So, you know, back to this whole creation mandate and being created in the image of God more specifically, God gave. For God so loved the world, he gave. We are all givers. When we give, we become more alive. And I think that people who understand that, who lean into generosity, tend to be more successful. And it's because other people who work for them, who are their customers, who are their investors, tend to be drawn to that, because I think, again, that's the right order. And yet there's a selfishness and a depravity in every human, most especially with me, that a lot of times doesn't want to give. And yet when I do, I feel more alive. So I'm an investor, so I'm in a pattern recognition. When I give of my time or my money, I feel good. And so it's not necessarily this altruistic goal that I have. It's just it's a feeling of experiencing God's joy when I give and saying, well, you know, I enjoyed doing that. I felt God's pleasure, if you will, from the Chariots of Fire movie. And I'd like to get some more of that. I feel alive when I give. I think that when any of us really get that. Now, I know that a lot of teachers listen to your podcast. They get that intuitively. Okay. There's not a lot of selfish ambition in the average educator. There's some, undoubtedly, but to have chosen a vocation where you are just giving of yourself all day long, that's something that's super, super special. And I can learn a lot from teachers on that about what does it look like to be selfless, across in front of a couple hundred students each day. That's really motivating.
Henry, maybe last question for you I'm so grateful for your time and your thoughts on this, because if I'm a leader or, you know, teacher or somebody in some sort of situation where it's like, I have an idea, I see an opportunity, I want to go for it. I want to jump in and try to create a solution or a problem, whether that be in my institution, my organization, or whether that be creating something new. Like, what would you encourage if somebody sits at this precipice, you know, at this line and says, you know what, I either need to stand, which is uncomfortable because I see the opportunity, but I don't see the next step and I just need to jump. Like, what would be the encouragement to other entrepreneurs, people with entrepreneurial spirit, wherever they're at? What would you give them as kind of that place to say, hey, you know what, take the leap and see what happens?
Wow. Okay. So there's a lot there. And as with any of these questions, there's a lot of nuance and there's a lot of nuance. Let me take it on one hand, I want to be able to tell every one of your listeners, absolutely, go and take a chance. When you are able to take that leap, you're going to feel fully alive and it's going to be absolutely amazing. And yet at the same time, I want to give some caution as well. There's a great book that's out there called The E-Myth. It talks about this woman who's this amazing maker of cherry pies. Everybody's like, you know, I can't remember what her name is, but say it's Sally. Sally, you got to get out there and you got to start a business and you just got to take that leap. And in the process, she ends up finding out that actually being an entrepreneur is not all it's cracked up to be. And it's very, very difficult. And it's life. It takes away from some of her life. So that's why I want to kind of come back to this kind of sense of discernment and calling. And it's a sense of, being able to make good decisions in a community of close friends who know you, seeking the counsel of others, spending time in the Bible to understand what passages you're reading and what they tell you and how they resonate, and then a lot of time in prayer. To jump off of where you are right now into the entrepreneurial life is a very serious one, and it is absolutely life-giving. And my sense is that if you go through the process of seeking counsel from people that you know and admire, and you see a pattern with that in your prayer time and your Bible time, then it's disobedient to not go off and jump. And yet, if you find that you want to go off and do something and everything else in your life seems to be kind of aligning against it, then maybe it would be willful to jump off. I think that we need to be able to go through life and try to understand when are we being willful and when are we being faithful. And if you can get a sense as to how that plays out in your life, you'll know whether you should leap and take that opportunity or not.
Henry, that's an incredible distinction between, I think it goes back to your podcast, the faithful entrepreneur versus the willful entrepreneur, right? We live in such a world where it's like, go make it happen. But there's a faithfulness and a consideration that goes much deeper than just going on my own.
Yes.
So Henry, thanks for your time. Thanks for your wisdom. And thanks for, just this experience for me. I really appreciate it.
Eric, what a great privilege and blessing it is for me to share with you and to see this play out where you are now and with your audience. And the last thing I just want to encourage the folks that are listening to is just being able, especially since I'm so taken with the fact that a good number of your listeners are educators, there's something remarkably special about encouraging the creative energy of a student, and being able to help foster that is unbelievable. And what a high calling that is, to be in a spot to be able to encourage hundreds and hundreds of students to be able to, when they see something that's broken, ask them how they might fix that. And as that happens, just there's going to be a tidal wave of creativity and innovation, and just more of a society that aligns with the way that I think it was originally created. Thank you for your leadership in the space.
Thanks, Henry.